evening, everybody. Okay, let's open our Bibles to Leviticus 4. We're going to hit the sin offerings. This is second go around at this. We only got it so far last week. There's, like I said, in this chapter, there are four different types of people, personhood, if you want to call it, that are going to be discussed about the sin offerings. And again, I gave you four P's so it'd be easy for you to remember. It'd be priests, people, mean community of people, all right? Rulers would be like princes, and then the individual would be like a person, okay? So that's the way you can remember what's going on with these sin offerings. So we're not looking at all the sin offerings, burnt offerings, everything that takes place, drink offerings and grain offerings, all that on public assemblies or things that involve that. We're looking at individual bringing forth these offerings for sacrifices and their responsibility, depending on what reason they're coming before the priests to offer their offering. Okay? So we talked last week about the priests, and you know they would have to bring what would be deemed a very valuable animal among the camp of the Israelites. And particularly, again, I'm looking at this from when this is written, when they were in the wilderness in the tabernacle, okay, system. So, you know, this is when it's delivered, so the value is going to be appraised based upon that, or those conditions, we'll say. So, you know, these are going to be very valuable animals. They're not going to be probably as plentiful as others. So there's, you know, there's going to be a difference in the way that the individual involved in bringing this offering is communicated. There can be a difference in value of the animal that's presented. There might be a difference of gender, and we'll get into that. And then there might be a difference, and the main difference that's communicated through this chapter, I believe, that we're supposed to grasp because sin separates, is that there's a graduated separation under the law system. And I spoke about that last week, and I've mentioned it to many of you that are here tonight. You've heard me mention it over the years. You know, you got only the priests can enter the holy place, high priest, holy of holies once a year. The people could only come as far, or rulers, even a ruler, could only come as far as the courtyard, okay, and offer their animal at the altar of burnt offering. That's it. That's as far as they could go, okay, and that included the regular, everyday Joe and Jane Israelite, okay. So you're going to have groups of people that are near or involved as being near or involved in the work of the tabernacle. That's the priest, okay, the anointed priest. So that'd be not only the high priest, but you'd see, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, are also anointed. And if you want to read an interesting deal about, you know, well, we'll get to that later. I'm jumping ahead. Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, so we talked last week that the priest, anytime that they brought a sin offering for something that they did, and again, this is supposed to be an unintentional sin, meaning you've done it in error. You miscalculated. You did something. It's not supposed to be deliberate, okay? And, you know, we'll get to here in just a moment to Numbers 15, just so I can prove that to you, and what the cost was if you came, you know, had a belligerent attitude, and you're going to go ahead and just sin and hope that this offering you brought was going to be acceptable to the Lord. That was never its intention, the law system. But again, back to the priest. So the priest would have to bring a bullock. He'd have to slay it. He'd take the blood, catch it, go back into the tabernacle with the priests and the congregational or the people's sin. Again, what did the priest do? He was the intermediary, or they were the intermediaries for the people as a whole, right? So that's why you see when you're talking about congregational sin and priest sin, that blood had to go into the tabernacle, because that sin basically broke the covenant, separated the covenant and the service of the people to the Lord as being acceptable. So the priest would have to take care of reestablishing that. So then he'd go with the blood, sprinkle it seven times, it says before the veil. Some translations will say on the veil. Okay, so it either was right before or right on it. I like the idea of it being on it. Imagine what that would look like after a day or two of those kind of sins being offered. And then they would go over to the altar of incense, take some of the blood out of the bowl, and then they would apply it to the horns of that came up out of that altar of incense. Again, horns in the Old Testament, I'm not going to have time to prove it tonight, but you can check it out. Horn usually communicates power or strength, power predominantly in the Old Testament. So when he's doing that, he's reestablishing, okay, the covenant, so to speak. The altar of incense is also represented in the New Testament. We just read it, I think, in Revelation 5 from Mr. Serrano, that, you know, that's where it was the type of prayers of the saints, okay? So that would reestablish the communication, reestablish everything between God and the people, reestablish the covenant, shall we say, that had been severed by that sin. And then all of a sudden the people's prayers, the intercessory work of the priest is now enabled once again. It's effective, it's efficacious, okay? Then he'd take the remainder of the blood, come out, and in the presence of the people that were watching, and believe me, I believe there was Israelites watching these kind of things go down, he'd then spill the remainder of the blood around the altar base, which was typical of all the other sin offerings, okay, or all the other offerings that we've talked about, burnt and peace, that involved the slaying of an animal, okay? And then from there were, you know, other things that would go on that we're going to get to in a little while, that we'll go into Leviticus 6, get some additional information, okay, about not necessarily the congregational and the priests' sin offering, but the sin offerings for the rulers or the princes and for the individual person, okay? Because you're going to see additional information come with those. So, and then what would happen is when they took the fat, the lobe, the liver, all the stuff associated with the peace offerings, then that would be burned. There would be the process. First, the sin has to be taken care of. Okay, now we've got that resolved. Now we can offer the fat, which God likes. It's representative of the best of what the people were to bring. So again, you can see he's taking care of the sin, then saying, everything's good. I'll take the fat now, which was usually a soothing aroma, something that he accepted well. Okay. And you'll see that that's what goes on with the priest's offering for sin and for the congregational offering for sin, when the sin of a congregation would occur. And we'll get into a couple of examples. Well, how could that happen? Or, you know, what could a priest do? And all that kind of stuff that would create this issue where he'd have to offer this sin offering. Okay, and we'll get to a couple of those in a minute. But I want to just go back and read a little bit, kind of refreshing your mind, the priest and the congregational sin, okay? So we already read the first part of Leviticus 4 last week, okay? And I want to just pick up in verse 11, after the sacrifice of peace offerings, of fat, you know, like the sacrifice of peace offering is offered up in smoke on the altar, a burnt offering. In verse 11 of Leviticus 4, it says, but the hide of the bull, all its flesh with its head and its legs and its entrails, its refuse, that is all of the bull, he is to bring out to a clean place outside the camp. I talked about that, where the ashes are poured out. These are where the ashes off the altar burnt, the bronze altar burnt offering, they would all go out there and be in a clean place and drop there, okay, when it got cleaned out. Okay, and then you'd have to get wood, put it on top of those ashes, burn that entire rest of the bull, consume it as quickly as they could, right? And then ashes would go there as well in this clean place. So again, communicated anything that comes in contact with sin, God says, I don't want any of it at all. Get rid of it. Get it out of here. So it had to be completely consumed. Now, the other thing that's communicated for the individual in the camp is that the sins have been consumed, okay? They're gone. That's the picture that they should be getting. They're gone. They got consumed. But also a picture, wow, this is a high price to pay. You know, every time somebody's offering up some kind of a sin offering, you know, that the priest or the congregational, boom, up goes that smoke. So let me see it. You know, in the book of Revelation, it says, pedestal, it says the smoke, right, of their torment rises forever and ever. Those are the people that are in sin, right? According to the book of Revelation. Smoke of their torment rises forever and ever. So kind of a foreshadow in that system, in the tabernacle system, of the sin offerings, whew, that smoke's rising, right? And they're going, whew, could have been a bad place if they were in a good one. But that's what happens with sin, completely got to be consumed. See, so that's why when the Lord comes back and judges, everything's going to be consumed, right? Because in some form or another, it's been touched by sin. So he's just going to whoo, burn the whole thing up. So you kind of see all these connections, old and new, why the language is used the way it is in the New Testament, and the principles are communicated that way. They're there, see. And God set this all up with a physical type system so we'd be able to make application. Back to Leviticus 4. Now, if the whole congregation of Israel commits an error and the matter escapes the notice of the assembly, and they commit any of the things which Yahweh has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty, excuse me, when the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering and bring it before the tent of the meeting. So this is the same thing as the priest, okay? Then the elders of the congregation now have to file in if there's been a congregational sin. That would usually be the leaders of the 12 tribes is the way that this would be understood. And if you wonder how I come with that, go read Numbers 7 when they brought the Levites and the priests all the stuff they needed for serving in the tabernacle. The heads of the tribes, each one brought a bunch of stuff. And it's all the same, okay, that they bring. But there's 12 heads of tribes. So you can kind of tie things together, make inferences, pretty solid inferences of how this worked. So you'd have the leaders, the princes of each tribe come forward, and they'd have to lay their hands on the head of the bull, saying, okay, we're representing our tribe. This over here is Simeon, over there is, you know, Reuben, over there, you know, Dan. They're going through, and they're all laying their head, coming up as a group. So you can just see this circle of guys kind of trying to get their hands on this animal so they can make the association, right? And then the substitution. Identification and substitution is going to go through this animal. So that's what they would do, okay? The animal is slain. The bull shall be slain before the Lord. Then the anointed priest brings some of the blood of the bull to the tent of the meeting, and he goes right through the same process that the priest did. And again, this is because the priest typically act as the mediator for the entire nation of Israel. That's why these two are the same, because the priest is intricately involved in either his personal sin or is directly associated with the sin of the congregation. Okay, how could a congregation be involved in a congregational sin? Well, there's several that you can think of. Well, let's just use a very obvious one in the book of Numbers. When the 12 spies went in to the promised land, right? They come out. Caleb, Joshua, hey, we can take this place. We can do it. We got the Lord with us. And the others, oh, no, 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 no. What did the whole congregation say? Let's stone those boys, think we can do it. Let's side with the naysayers. Congregational sin. Now, they may not have realized it right that moment, but they did, right? Because then they later tried to take the land, so to speak, and got their backsides whooped pretty good. Okay, so, again, that's an example. Now let's step back. How about a priest? How about a priest? Well, the best one I can give you is Leviticus 10. You know, it's party time in the household of Aaron, at least his boys. I don't know if it was Saturday. I don't know, but it was. So Nadab and Abihu, in verse 1 of Leviticus 10, sons of Aaron took their respective fire pans. What was in the fire pan? Oh, yeah, incense, right? Incense. And placed incense on it, you know, take some coals out of the altar burnt offering, supposed to. Placed incense on it and offered strange fire before Yahweh, which he had not commanded him. Fire came out from the presence. This was so egregious. Lord says, no sacrifice can do for this, but I'm taking him out. Going to teach him a lesson. But there's an example of a priest doing something. You know, these guys probably thought, well, it's probably okay. You know, it appears, based on the context that follows, that they were probably imbibing in something that made them less than sober-minded, we'll say. Okay? So, but that's an example. And then you can read the context after that. Moses goes to Aaron and says, hey, why didn't you eat the sin offering? Or no, not, okay, that I'm introducing on purpose because you have to get additional information when we look at the last two offerings regarding the sin offering that have to do with the princes and the people. You're going to notice a big difference if you haven't already read through Leviticus 4. I'm not going to read it other than I'm going to tell it to you and let you guys go back and read Leviticus 4 for the sake of time. what would happen with their offerings, the priest would intercede. If it was a ruler, it was a male, a billy goat, or a male sheep, okay, lamb, whatever. All right? And he would make the offering, slay it, go through the process with the priest doing all the things that he's supposed to do. Think of all the stuff we've talked about, all right? And instead of going into the tabernacle, he would stay out in the courtyard, and he would take the blood and take some of that blood, and he'd put it on the four horns of the bronze altar and then pour the rest out at the base. So everybody reads that for the first time, if you were like me, and you go, why? What's this all about? And again, that's where I started to, as I learned more and more about the Old Testament, New Testament, saw the types and the shadows and the fulfillments and I started to realize, hey, this is all about sin and separation, and so why are rulers and the people out in the courtyard and the priests and the congregation in the tabernacle? And again, I already told you why I believe the priests and the congregation has to go in the tabernacle, because it actually defiles God's holy place. Whereas a ruler and the people, they never come into the presence of God in any form. They're always out in the courtyard, aren't they? It's as far as they can come. The average person and the average prince can't go any further. So their offering, God's communicating to people, their offering is going to stay out here because this is among the people. It's not in the tabernacle. Okay? So you kind of see that subtle little twist there. All right? So let's drop down in Leviticus 4. Oh, hold on. Before we go, though, let's go to Numbers 15 real quick. I told you I would let you see this. About verse 20. Okay. 27. This is where it's going to deal with it. And we're going to go through probably about 30. Verse 27 through 30 of Numbers 15. Also, if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat. I just mentioned the rulers do the male goat. The average individual would do a female. I'll discuss that in a minute. Okay? For a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement before Yahweh for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, by error, miscalculation, something like that, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among you. And you always ask yourself, well, why would he have this sojourn among you? I used to ask myself that. Then I went back and read Exodus real close. I went, oh, they came out with a mixed multitude. Huh. Okay, verse 30. But the person who does anything defiantly, purposely, whether he is native or an alien, that one is blaspheming Yahweh, and that person shall be cut off from among his people because he has despised the word of Yahweh and has broken his commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt is on him. Anything happened to him like he became deceased in that state, we know where he was headed in the eternal realm. This is very serious. Very, very serious. Okay? So that's why we don't, So you end up with Paul saying at the beginning of Romans 6, after he gives a great lesson on mercy and grace in chapter 5 and 4, probably even back in chapter 3 of Romans 3. In chapter 6, he says, shall we continue in sin that grace may increase? What does he say? Yeah, we got a great system. And he goes, may it never be. See, it's still consistent with what the law system was set up for. This is not to be used for any kind of intentional, deliberate sin. Okay? So you see it all the way through. That's why I said there's all kinds of what I call sacrificial language in the New Testament, and it always takes you back to the concepts and the principles of the old. I don't ever want to put anybody under the old system, under the law. I don't want that, but we do want to grab, because God spent a lot of time driving that home so that we'd be able to make the connections in the new. Okay, let's go back to Leviticus 4 now. Okay, so I mentioned what happens with the ruler and the elders having to lay on their hands, and it talks about what is done with the blood and where it's sprinkled, and all that good stuff. Okay, so that was verse 22 is where the leader is. I kind of gave you a paraphrase. Now let's go to verse 27. Now that was a male. usually males are the ones that are, you know, they're the ones that are active in the community. They're the ones that drive the decision making. They're the, you know. And the ladies, the females, okay, are usually the more submissive ones. They're the ones that willingly subject themselves, right? So when we see a female animal being offered, okay, usually there's that idea is communicated there. And then the other thing is that it also tells the ladies that are in the Israel, among the Israelite nation, hey, it isn't all just a male patriarchal system here. We're going to have the ladies involved here in these animal sacrifices too, but I mean the female side of the animals. So what does this mean? Everybody's involved, right? Everybody's involved in this thing. Not only in sin, but also in the sacrifice. All right, so you know, we got female, you know, a nanny goat, you know, would be the goat. So verse 27, now if anyone in the community or the common people sins unintentionally in error in doing any things which Yahweh has commanded not to be done, becomes guilty. If his or her sin, which he has committed, is made known to him. Now again, the guys were the representative of their household. So that's why it always says him, okay? Then he shall bring for his offering a goat, a female, without defect. Everything had to be without defect. Bring your best, right? Always bring your best. Don't try and cheat the system, right? And 29, he shall lay his hand on the head of the sin offering, slay the sin offering. Again, everybody that does this slays it, okay? At the place of the burnt offering. Usually on the north side of the altar, where this took place. It was information in earlier stuff in Leviticus 1 about the whole burnt offering. Okay, then the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar burnt offering, and all the rest of its blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar. Then he shall remove all its fat. So you see there's a process with all of these. Whatever the process is of the type of animal for a priest or a congregational or a ruler, whatever, at once they're done, then out comes the fat. After this atonement type work, atonement work's done, then the fat is offered up. And we're going to see here that verse 31, then he shall remove all its fat, just the fat was removed from the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest shall offer it up and smoke on the altar for a soothing aroma to the Lord. See, that's here on the personhood. He mentions a soothing aroma. Was it a soothing aroma when it was the priest or the congregation or the leader? You know, it doesn't say it, but I think we could infer it. That's probably true that, again, there's a process. Once the atonement's been made with a sin offering, bringing back into at-one-ment with God, the peace-type offering is offered. It follows the same process, same organs and everything are involved, and it's communicating. That's resolved. We're back at one. Everything's good. So God's constantly saying, but once it's fixed, it's like, awesome. Everything's great. See, so he's always letting them know, we're back in good standing. It's not like he was standing up there like some of these gods that were worshipped by the pagans that surround him, just, you know, do that again. You know, that's not the picture that God was presenting. The picture is, I want this resolved. I want to be at one with you. I'm a truly caring, loving God. Okay? So I'm making an avenue for that to always remain established, this solid covenant that we have. Okay, if he offers a lamb, brings a lamb as his offering, that's shall bring it. Female without defect, same process. Okay? So that's on down through verse 35. The priest is to take some of the blood in verse 34, offer it. Then he shall remove all its fat. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him in regard to his sin. I'm in verse 35. I'm jumping around here on you. Which he has committed, he will be forgiven. Covered. Right. Now, Leviticus 6. This is where we need more information. I mentioned this in the Lord's Supper a while back, probably last month, if I recall. I brought this up. But in reference to the sin offerings, okay, Leviticus 6 is going to talk specifically from verse 8 on, the part of all these offerings are going to go to the priest. You know, and I've been throwing it in as we've gone along through some of these offerings, but here he's going to talk about in verse 24, some important information we need. In verse 24, Leviticus 6, then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron, to his son, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. Here we go, pay attention. In the place where the burnt offering is slain, the sin offering shall be slain before Yahweh. It is most holy. That's the first time that terminology shows up. You notice that? We didn't see any most holy in chapter 4, did we? Unless you guys saw something I didn't. Okay, what's going on here? New concept, being ready to be communicated. perk up the ears, pay attention. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. What? Yep. It shall be eaten in a holy place in the court of the tent of meeting. Okay. Is that all the sin offerings? Well, let's keep reading. Anyone who touches its flesh will become consecrated. So if a priest touched the flesh of a sin offering, consecrated. When any of its blood splashes on a garment, in a holy place you shall wash what was splashed on. So that garment had to be washed. And so they would wash it in an earthenware vessel in which it was boiled. And if it was boiled in an earthenware vessel, had to be broken. I think it's talking about the garment here, brethren, in immediate context. Okay. And then if it was boiled in a bronze vessel, it had to be scoured and rinsed. Reclean. Oh, got to get all that sin. See, really focused on this sin thing is a big deal. We got to eradicate it all, right? Verse 29. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It is most holy. But, here's the yabut. No sin offering of which any of the blood is brought into the tent of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. Remember I told you all of that carcass that was part of the priest of the congregational sin offering had to be completely consumed in a clean place, had to go out and be completely consumed, right? We talked about that, all right? So those offerings, they couldn't eat any of that, right? And if they were following the procedure, right, there wouldn't be anything to eat because it was all being toted out and burned, right? The fat parts were burned on the altar of burnt offering. There wasn't going to be any part of that to eat, right? So the only ones that they got a chance to eat from, which supplied some of the food for the priests who were working in the tabernacle, serving in the tabernacle on a daily basis, would be those that came from the people. Now, we're just talking about these sin offerings right now, in particular what I'm driving at, would be the ones that came from the rulers, the princes, or the individual person. Okay, and then there's other places you can go, and I just don't have time tonight, and you can read what the peace offering, what part of the peace offering got, whatever. Okay, what is my point in all this? Okay, well, I talked about it in Hebrews 13. There's a statement made that says, we have an altar from which those who serve the tabernacle have no right to eat. Right? And I mentioned this in my Lord's Supper because it gets missed, and and they're going to forget this, Lorenzo. I thought he was back there. There he is. They're going to forget this. They're going to need to repeat it, okay? That's probably a couple months away, am I right? At least, probably. Yeah. They're going to forget it. So you're going to repeat it, and there'll be people that were here tonight that will go, oh, cool, I never heard that before. Okay, so trust me. All right, so I just want to show you something in Hebrews 13. And, you know, there was more stuff I wanted to go through tonight, but we're going to kind of stop there and let you guys think about some things. I might do one thing in Leviticus, one more thing. All right. You can see I'm bouncing around tonight, deciding what I'm going to cover. Hebrews 13, verse 11, or verse 10. We have an altar from which those who serve the tabernacle have no right to eat. Now watch the context closely. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the holy place by the high priest for sin are burned outside the camp. Okay, he's talking about a congregational offering or one for the priest, right? Remember, this is written to Hebrews who understood the law. So they're going, yeah, we can't eat that. The one that's brought in, the blood that's sprinkled in the tabernacle, right? Brought into the holy place. You guys with me? Okay. Okay. For the bodies of those animals, the blood brought into the holy place by the high priest is an offering for sin are burned outside the camp. All that's supposed to go outside the camp, right? You don't get to consume any of it, correct? Everybody with me? That's important. You're tracking this. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people through his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Yeah, he had to go outside the gate, right? But it says, well, let us go out to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. All right? For here we do not have a lasting city, but we are seeking a city. But here's the part I want you to notice. It says, we have an altar from those who serve the tabernacle have no right to eat. And the ones that they did eat were called most holy. The ones that came from the ruler or the person's sacrifice. But you could not eat the priest or the congregational. Okay, now if you go back to Hebrews 9, what's being talked about is the Day of Atonement. That's a congregational offering. Sin offering is involved. And again, Lorenzo's going to do a great job when he gets here in Hebrews 9 and go through Leviticus 16 in detail. Okay, that is blood that went into the Holy of Holies, not just the holy place, the Holy of Holies, and was sprinkled, right? On the mercy seat. No way you're touching any of that stuff, right? No way in the Old Testament system. Oh, but we had an offering that was offered on our behalf. The one who was the offering also was the executor, or the one who mediated, went into the very Holy of Holies in the presence of God and sprinkled the blood, right? Jesus did that, correct? Y'all with me? I'm not speaking anything crazy, right? Y'all with me? I'm looking to see. Everybody tracking? Okay. What did we just partake of earlier tonight? Didn't we partake of that offering? He was our sin offering, wasn't he? Oh, we have an altar from which those who serve in the tabernacle have no right to eat. Under the law, they could not. Under the new covenant, every week we get to be reminded. Sin's gone, baby. We're partaking now, and it's a peace offering. And it's most holy, isn't it? Make sense? Okay. All right. Now, if you wonder what's going on in Leviticus 10 back there, there's kind of a dialogue. After the boys do what they do, Nadab and Abihu get in trouble, get smoked up. All right. Verse 16. I'm bypassing a bunch of context, which I wanted to go through, but I'll leave you guys to read it. Moses searched carefully for the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it had been burned up. So he was angry with Aaron's surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, saying, "Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place, for it is most holy?" Okay. And he gave it to you to bear away the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord. Almost, you have the goats only offered for the congregation on the Day of Atonement. Kind of, there's things you got to kind of tie together, think about, okay? Behold, and this is not the Day of Atonement, as far as I can tell from the context. I'm just trying to get you guys to think about things here now, this discussion between Moses and Aaron. Because a lot of us read this and go, what? Behold, since its blood had not been brought inside into the sanctuary, you should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary, just as I commanded, or rather in the holy place. But Aaron spoke to Moses, "Behold, this very day they presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before Yahweh. When things like these happened to me, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of the Lord?" Moses went, "Oh yeah, wouldn't have been. If I'd have been offering as a priest, no, wouldn't have been." Got it. Does this make sense now? This is a really loose look at this, okay? Really fast and loose. But I'm trying to help you understand something. How many of you have read this before and went, what? Come on, put your hands up. I did. What? I'm not getting this. Until I started to do a study on the book of Leviticus, okay? There's still more information I could give you on this, but I'm just trying to throw a little bit of information out, get you start to search through and look through the book of Leviticus, see what you can come up on your own. Because guys, those of you that get up front to do the Lord's Supper meditation, there's a bunch of good information that you can bring out of this book and share with the brothers and sisters in Christ in a Lord's Supper meditation. Again, like I said, sin of Nadab and Abihu, God smoked them like that, didn't even get a chance to fix their situation, right? And Moses told Aaron through God, don't you pout about your boys, okay? I will be treated as holy, and I will be honored by this people. And that's a big mess up. Nope. Okay. So, again, you can go through this, work your way through it. Next week, we're going to look at, we'll probably touch on some verses in the New Testament, talk about the sprinkled blood. Okay, just throw that out there so you guys can see the sacrificial language. We'll move on into chapter 5, which in Leviticus, which some people say, well, that's the beginning of the guilt offerings. Others say, no, that's a continuation of the sin offerings. Okay, we'll just pick up the first 13 verses there. Next week, Leviticus 5, and then if time allows, we'll go on into the guilt offerings. And you're going to see some differences in these two. Okay? Thanks, guys, for your attention tonight. If you got any questions, go ahead and ask Jared. He'd be happy to help answer them for you. Okay, so, oh, I'm sorry, Jared. No, you got any questions, I'm happy to try and take them. Okay? Let's go with the Lord in prayer. Lord God, we are thankful for your word. I am. Some of these things can be difficult to work through, and sometimes we don't gather everything in the first reading or two and have to go back over, and I know how that can be for me, so I know what it can be like for my brothers and sisters in Christ. So I know all these offerings are types and shadows of what you accomplished in the offering of yourself, Lord Jesus. And so we're trying to attach the value and appraisal and what's going on here and understanding it. What comes through clearly is that you are God of no partiality. No matter how high and mighty or how meek and lowly you are, if transgression is made, there is a cost to be accounted for, and you have always given everyone an opportunity and a way back to you, and I'm just thankful for that. And Jesus, you are the one that's been offered to the world as a way back to the Father. So you said, no one comes to the Father except through me. So I'm grateful that you have recorded that for our benefit, for others' benefit as we communicate it to them, and the word helps us to understand that there is a way back no matter what happens to others around us or even in our own life. That nothing is so great that we cannot make our way back to you through you, Lord Jesus. But all those sacrifices are there to help us to understand and appraise the incredible amount of principles, concepts, values that were communicated in those Old Testament sacrifices just so that we can really kind of get a grasp on what we really have. It's incredibly mind-blowing to me and just super, super valuable to me on a personal level, what this communicates and how much it tells me that you actually do love us. And it just makes it so much easier for me to want to be among the brethren and to encourage and exhort and to equip. And I pray that I've done that tonight through the short time and this quick little lesson tonight. And that ultimately you are honored through it, Lord. And like you said, you are to be treated as holy and you are to be honored among the people. So I pray that's been the case tonight. Lord, thank you for all that you do for us. Thank you for being a part of your privileged people, holding this position as royal priests and those that can come before you at any time, approach your throne of grace. There is no separation any longer. We are able to draw near at all times. And we truly are a blessed people. Thank you again for allowing us to live under this covenant. We just pray that we will be good stewards of what you've entrusted us. And we ask this through Jesus, who is the Christ. Amen.